Okay, finally, Chemistry Talks is back again. And today's guest, he was my roommate for like 5 months. He's playing with my dick as we speak. And he's Wabdullah. Hello, what's up?
Hey man, nice to be here.
Yeah, we're recording this podcast as I'm staying in, well, we're staying together in an apartment of a friend of his family in Assen, Netherlands. In my, I don't know, backpacking trip across Europe, travel blog series, jiu-jitsu travel series. I don't know how to describe this, but yeah. So, Anis, you wanted to talk about culture, history, music?
Yeah, just maybe a little bit of things about that interest you in life. So for me, it's those things, you know.
Yeah.
I love to talk, so. And the things that interest me, I was like, well, you know, what's life about? Like, what do you do in your daily life? I love stories, you know. Just, well, life is a story in itself, you know. And I also love reading stories about other people from history or like. Maybe even from like modern day people, and like if you see something, you're always like, okay, what's the story here? You know, what's the interesting thing? What's the thing that really grabs you? So yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
A very funny fact about Anis is that he is doing, well, he's almost finishing his second bachelor. His first bachelor was on history, but then he realized that there's no money on studying history or a
Yeah,
line of
job
job.
opportunities are not so good either.
So he ended up studying international business and he's almost done with that. So he knows his shit about story. We had actually talked a lot about history before. Especially the Roman Empire, what's the name of these guys? The Kurds? No, no, not the
The
Kurds.
Greeks?
The no, fuck no.
Ottomans?
The Moors.
The Moors.
Yeah,
Ah, yes.
we have talked about the Moors, the Roman Empire. Today we saw a 70s movie about the origin of Islam. It's called The Message. I do recommend that movie, and I'm not part of Islam. I don't practice Islam, but I consider it a great movie to get educated about the religion, especially if you are from a Western country and you just like me didn't receive any information on the background or the history of Islam. I think it's a pretty good idea of a way to learn a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's normal not to learn a lot about most schooling you get in, especially Western countries, is pretty orientated on Western countries, and most people, what they know about like Eastern culture is also based on like Orientalism from like the previous century, because a lot of things when you think about it, at least when I was young, you would think about like the Middle East, like things like Sindbad or something, like the first thing that comes to your mind often, you know. So yeah, it's so cool to like learn some new things.
It's interesting because you grew up in the Netherlands, but you would visit Algeria periodically, right? You would visit Algeria quite often.
Yeah, my dad is from Algeria, so I would go there since I was like a young child to on vacation and trips and stuff to like meet my father's family and to like see the stuff, because he also wanted me to learn about the Algerian culture. I also have like a double nationality, so it was important for him that I was like familiar with the Algerian culture and like environment and things like that. Plus, yeah, my dad really liked it for me to go there and stuff. So yeah, I went there. So my first trip, I was like a little child still. I think I was, I don't know, five, something like that. So you can't really, in my opinion, it's hard to be like really conscious of the things you see at that age, you know. But it was still cool, like your first flight and stuff, and you remember some small details. Yeah, I remember when I was really young. Like there was some silly stuff going on, like there's a bunch of stories, like one time my dad told me we were like drawing water from this well. There's a lot of ancient ruins in Algeria. We were staying in this my family is mostly centered in the eastern part of Algeria, so there's cities called Constantine, Steff, and Borj, but also some villages. We were seeing this Roman like ruins and stuff, and close to there is that also this aqueduct, and to get there we needed some donkeys because it's like a mountainous area. So we were there and my dad told me, stay with the donkey. And when I took it literal, so I just followed along with it, like behind the donkey, and the donkey was going to drink something. And then when he wanted to take a sip, he looked behind and like, he looked at me and I was looking at the donkey, and then he kicked me in the chest. I'm like, fuck. And I just fell down and I cried like a child, I suppose. And then my dad came up to me and was like, don't cry, son. And he's like, help me up, you know. I was like, okay. Well, that was an adventure.
Yeah, shout out to Abdul Baki.
Yeah. That was mostly a funny story from Algeria. But most of my life, I grew up in the Netherlands. So, like, I'm still pretty young, but like I grew up in the northern part of the Netherlands, and my young adulthood, the last few years I've lived more in the city of Utrecht though, which is in the central part of the Netherlands. It's also a more bigger city. So yeah, that's mostly it. Let me see. I mostly wanted to talk a little bit about culture reset, right?
Okay, yeah, okay, of course, yeah.
So, for me, the most interesting parts when I was a kid was like going to museums and stuff, and watching movies and things. I got interested in culture and like history and things like that. Especially like, I don't know how it was for you, like, for me, like, as a kid, like, what do you do? Mostly you just enjoy playing with your friends and stuff. And I remember the first time I saw, like, I think it was The Gladiator, and I was like, whoa, this is awesome, you know? But I was like, all the cool little battles and stuff, the speeches, and there was some morality in the story as well, and, like, this cool guy, he has some values, and it's all quite different. And I remember I think it was Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah.
With like he looked like a cool grandpa with a beard and stuff, and I was like, damn, that's like cool. That's pretty cool. Just the aesthetics, the uniforms, and
even the name Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Yes, I was like, damn, and that got me really interested in history, especially like the Roman history. So I started reading about it in the library and stuff and online, because you're not, in my opinion, like. Just like public, I went to a public school in my youth because it's quite normal in the Netherlands. And even if it wasn't, my parents thought it was better to go to a public school to like for socialization instead of like homeschooling or something. So I went there and like, but you don't learn a lot, even in like university. If you don't, they don't go in like super great detail unless you like, I guess, specialize in it. So yeah, it's mostly just things that are like, it's not like you go there in front. Even though we have a more like, we started the podcast and I said, the history and stuff is more focused on like Western history. It's not like you go in super great detail. I think most things you learn, you should just learn yourself when you're like, in any subject, I think. Like, if you're really interested, most of it you learn yourself from the internet or through, like, action and effort you put in, you know?
Yeah. My first approach, like, enjoying history, I think it was, like, in third grade. My teacher, because we would only have, like, one or two teachers, like, one teacher would give, like, five subjects. When you're very young, he really liked history, and I really enjoyed his classes, and I really enjoyed how much I learned from Aztec culture from him.
Yeah.
He was a cool guy, Fernando Baudel is his name, and he was super cool guy, super buff teacher. So that's also cool. Like if you're learning history from a strong with a fucking guy with big fucking guy. Arms,
yeah,
and six pack, is like okay, history is not for nerds. You can be a cool guy and know history. And that also, like, right after that, I had my first, like, big travel vacation. I would say, like, my first time I went outside of the continent, I went to Russia. Mm. It was my first encounter outside of the Americas. And I fell in love with traveling and with Russia, Russian culture, the Soviet territory. I was only 9, not even 10, and I already liked the concept of like not communism per se, but like the aesthetic behind it.
Yeah, yeah, like, I get what you mean.
You know how when you're 10 years old you get obsessed with history, or you have to obsess either with Soviet Union, Nazis, or the Roman Empire.
Okay, I get what you mean.
I got obsessed with the Roman Empire and the Soviet Union.
Yeah, yeah.
There's people who get obsessed with pirates, but that's very weird.
Yeah, definitely.
But we all knew that guy who was like...
Maybe that's only like one generation though. Jack Sparrow, Jack Sparrow generation.
No, but that's not common at all. Like, I've met one of my best friends, shout out to Marcos Pugliese, who has also been on the podcast. That motherfucker is a pirate at heart.
I mean, a little explanation. We both studied for an Erasmus in Cologne, and there was this junkie. I was on the street, or I don't know if he was a junkie. I assume he was a junkie, but he also always dressed up like a pirate. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course. I gave him like 25 euros total.
Yeah, that guy.
Like 1 euro a week, okay, or something like that.
He was always hanging around a place called Klodwijk Platz. I think he also suffered. But when these obsessions, you know, keep on going through like when you're like 30, it's a bad thing maybe. Unless
you're a cool junkie, but you're receiving money from a Mexican and a Dutch guy.
But they do say a lot of like, you have to be crazy in order to be like super successful, because I mean, if you have a balanced life, probably you're not going to be like, I mean, I feel like most people, like top athletes, top business people,
they're kind of crazy.
They're kind of crazy because what did they really do in their life? You know, they just work or they just
train.
They do one thing. They're obsessive. Well, this guy was obsessive, but if there was like something if you could be really successful being a pirate, I mean, he will be successful. It's just that the thing he's really obsessing about is not that relevant. You know what I mean?
He just missed it like for 300 years or so.
Yeah, maybe if he was born like 300 years before, or maybe 300 years in the future, he could be successful.
He could be a great space pirate.
Yeah, exactly.
If he was born like 300 or 400 years from now, he would be an incredible space pirate. I don't know what you want to say, but that guy is a legend.
Yeah.
Shout out to crackhead Jack Sparrow. I hope he listens to this.
Indeed. No, but like to... history. And like, I really like generally the humanities in general. I'm not big on like maths and stuff. I don't know about you.
I fucking hate math. I'm good at it though.
Yeah.
But I fucking hate
math. I'm not that bad at it either. But it's more that I'm more interested in like, if I have to choose like a language or like just like history, things like that, literature, creative things.
Learning languages and history.
Yes. And they're also quite interesting because when you think about, okay, I know something. How do I communicate this? You need language as the first tool you use. Yeah. So if you're good at language, you can communicate what you want to say. So, okay, whether it's like a message you got, like something you want to sell, or in every transmission, like knowledge, you want to... for everything, you need language. It's the primary... It's what our civilization is built on. So I think... literally, even religion, the message of God, you know, it's all language. So, okay, and I like how the ancients looked at it. So you had the Greeks, and they had like muses, and yes. The muses, you had the Greeks believed you need to do worship the muses to get like inspiration for where it's like history, literature, art. So if you wanted to like be a history teacher, or like I wanted to do a history test, I would worship, I would say muse, and you know, like for example, Cleo was the muse of history, and you'd go like, Cleo, bless me. and then, or like give me, you wanted to make a history, a painting that's historical, so I would make a painting of Caesar. I said, Cleo, please help me. And you, maybe you give some blood at the temple or something, or some
wine.
Some wine, exactly, you know, to help you make the painting really nice. And every art had, or every subject had its own muse. That's also where a museum comes from.
Muse. Because you're there to contemplate.
Exactly, it's like a double thing. So, yeah. And together it's like really cool, I think. So definitely... although I would say it's really interesting, and I like most of the humanities. But what would you say is your favorite? Like, is it language, history, art, maybe something else? Literature?
I think it might be history.
Yeah?
Because the only way to really understand the present is by understanding the past, and the only way to know what's going to happen in the future is by looking at the present.
I think for me it's right now it's literature. I think if I had to choose like a muse, I would choose literature, because like I said before, I really like stories, and it kind of changed for me. So what do I like about history when I really think about it? Do I like the dates or something?
No one gives a two fucks about the dates.
No, exactly. And okay, I'm gonna admit I'm a little bit autistic, so I like seeing those maps and stuff.
Hey, maps are cool.
Okay? Maps are cool.
Okay, every guy on the planet enjoys watching a cool map. I don't know how to fucking read a map. But you give me a cool map and I'm gonna pretend to read it for hours.
Have you never seen some guys and they have a bunch of maps on their walls and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Why? It's not that cool, but...
It can be cool if it's a correct map. Because if you have like a map of a video game city, like, I don't know, San Andreas, it's kind of cool, but at the same time, it's kind of uncool, you know?
Yeah, I guess. So that's the kind of stuff. So I was with literature, okay. Because I read a lot as well. And some is like fiction. Most of it is fiction, but also some non-fiction. But most of it is like literature. And I was like, okay. Like, if you like something, that's also my opinion, you'll do it a lot, right? So I can say I like maybe Yuitsu, but I never do Yuitsu, you know?
Yeah.
So how much do I like it? I could just go to Yuitsu gym, but I don't, so...
Exactly.
That's not how much... So in my opinion, like history, I used to do a lot of history, but I did less of it because I realized, okay, I'm gonna get a job here. And mostly it's if I read something, it's connected to like literature or something like that, or I just read a random Wikipedia page, you know, like, because I'm sort of a wiki warrior, so I just like to read sometimes a Wikipedia page or something. And there's also this cool website like Badass of the Month or something it's called. You can just Google it, like
Badass of the Month.
I think it's called that. Like, and there's this guy who writes these comedic articles about historic figures, and they're sort of true, but also he exaggerates a lot, and he makes it sound way cooler than it is. So it's like, and he exaggerates a lot, so it's really funny to read. It's kind of comedic, but yeah.
So okay, now. Talking about historical figures, because you might have, you can say it's kind of an area of expertise for you. Who is one historical figure who would you love to? I know you don't drink beer, so I'm not gonna say drink a beer with them. And I know
drink a mate, you know.
Drink a mate or eat some panini with.
Yeah, eat a panini and do a mate. A historical figure. Okay, I would probably, maybe a Dutch guy, because I'm from the Netherlands, so I'll be a little nationalistic.
So, okay, as you mentioned in the previous episode, Vincent van Gogh, because now I've been educated that it's not Vincent van Gogh, but it's Vincent van Gogh.
Yeah. So I was not the one to educate you, just to point it out. It was a girl, you know.
That's why I actually listened. If Annie's told me, yeah. I wouldn't listen.
For me, they're both fine.
Well, yeah. So would it be with Vincent van Gogh, who is the most famous Dutch ever, basically, that or the Flying Dutchman, the ghost from SpongeBob?
Yeah, probably I would want to talk with some painter, I think. Definitely. Although not Vincent van Gogh. Or maybe because we just went on Erasmus, maybe I would like to talk with him, you know? Somebody you're not even that interested in. Because I could talk with somebody I read a lot about. Then it's also like, what am I going to learn, you know? Like,
you're just sucking some ghost dick.
I'm sucking ghost dick, that's right. So maybe I would just like somebody I'm not that interested in, but like they're popular. Like, hey, why are you popular?
Erasmus, that guy was a badass.
And there's a bunch of people, like I'm sure that maybe the most interesting person would just be some farmer from like 1,000 years ago. Like, just sit down, like, hey, so what do you really think about, you know?
He was a missionary for everyone.
Because people, I don't think they were like complete idiots. So what do you think about? What's life, you know? Like,
okay, personally, like I agree with you on a certain level, but because we have, you know, this phrase that we're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
That's very true. Like, let's be honest, we have access to way more information than anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
And from the past, so maybe some people that we consider like they were geniuses or very smart people at their time, because of the access to technology and knowledge we have right now, we would kind of see them as slow of thinking.
But you think if you went back like as far as you could, and you took the smartest guy, that you would be smarter? I don't have that feeling.
It depends on the civilization.
I mean, if I were to talk with Cicero, like a lot of these people also spoke like a bunch of languages.
That's true.
Even if you go back like 300 years or 200,
mm-hmm.
they had like Latin education,
private
education.
I'm pretty sure that I'm more, that I'm smarter than Agustín Iturbide, who was like the first Mexican president. I'm pretty sure I was, that motherfucker didn't even know how to write. Okay.
Okay. But a lot of our theories are also.
But a lot of them didn't know how to write because it was very common at that time. But yeah, I right now, personally, I'm not gonna say I was actually smarter than him. Maybe it's just my big fucking ego. But I think a part of me truly believes that I would be smarter than Agustín Iturbide. Or a lot of other historical figures. I hope I'm wrong.
It could be.
But a part of me, I think it's my ego, tells me like, nah, you would be smarter than this guy.
I mean, maybe you could. I mean, I think when we talk about knowledge, okay, let's start there.
Okay, let me say something. I'm pretty sure I'm much smarter than Benito Juárez. And I'm not just going to say that. And I'm not going to say that because I actually believe that. But because I fucking hate that bastard. The worst president Mexico ever had. Fuck Benito Juarez. Fucking Hasbulla. Piece of shit. Cabron. Actually, Anis, he bought from me 500 peso bill. Because it has the ugly Hasbulla, a.k.a. Benito Juarez.
Mm. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I also bought the one with the butterflies.
Ah, yeah, 50 peso? No,
yeah.
40 peso?
I think it's 50. I think that was
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also bought some from, what is the other? Costa Rica.
Costa Rica, yeah. He bought the 50 one with Morelos and the butterfly.
Oh, this is the Costa Rica. The Costa Rican is 2 million, actually. And the pesos is 50. It has this Indian on the front.
No, it's
native.
No, he was actually a mix between Indian and the Spaniard. He was José María Morelos y Pavón. He was one of the guys who rose against the Spaniards.
Yeah.
I would love to talk with the
Hernán Cortés.
Oh, that guy. No, yeah, we're definitely gonna be smarter than him. A lot of people from that era were like they were like basically adventurous, because in Spain, after they killed the they had a lot of wars with the people from El Andalusia. Yes. So the Moors or the Muslims.
Yeah.
And after winning that war, there were a lot of like basically warrior class people who like needed some action, you know?
Yeah, they had the itch.
They had the itch. So what did they do?
They killed people.
They went to the Americas and they were like, yo, we've been training for like 100 all these years on the Muslims and the Jews. Now it's your turn, fuckers.
I actually think that Hernán Cortés wasn't that evil of a historical character as so other people portray.
You're saying there was a lot of propaganda or something?
Yeah, well, maybe. He did what was coming in that era. We cannot just judge people from the past with the standards of modern society.
Yeah, that's historic. That's what you learn in history.
Yeah.
As a history.
Everybody was an asshole. But also, I think, like, a lot of propaganda. Like, there's people who say, like, Europeans didn't even know how to bathe. Until they got in contact with the Native Americans, which is fucking bullshit. Like the Romans, they had like these common baths. They invented saunas, steam rooms, jacuzzis, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, Romans were quite. In some ways, they were really advanced, and in some other ways, they were really not, because they took a lot of things from the Greeks as well.
Yeah, of course.
Like, and oh, remember when at the beginning we were talking about the muses?
Yeah.
And the Romans were, so the Greeks prayed to the muses, but the Romans were like, I don't need no fucking muse to tell me how to fuck or how to think, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to pray to them, I can do it myself.
Yeah.
So in some way they were really more conservative than Greeks, and in other ways they were quite radical.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting. I think one historian described the Romans as like a caged lion. They're really cool.
They're really cool, but you cannot.
No, don't get in that cage.
Exactly.
They're gonna crucify you.
It's cool to see them from far, but you wouldn't like to be close to them.
There's only one thing more brutal than Roman history. That's Chinese history. You know?
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Like, Roman history is like, oh, they burnt. I have a couple of cool stories. This might be fun. Like, have I ever told you the story about the senator that went to this? It's not a senator. It was a delegate for the Roman Republic at the time.
Yes.
The Republic is when the Romans were the most quotation mark cool, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They had a lot of martial traditions and stuff that were still upheld during the imperial time. A lot of them like fell away because it became less like. Cultural and more like it all became professional and more like a job and less like tradition,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They took less pride in their like military service.
They became more just like efficient.
They
became more polished.
Yeah. So, but the story is this: this dignitary went to this town who was like allied to the Romans, but they did not pay tax or something or tribute, because they all paid tribute to Rome, like some gold or grain or whatever. And this village, they refused to pay taxes that year. And so the Romans sent an emissary to like, hey, what's going on? And when he came to the city, they all threw shit at him. And because that was the greatest humor at the time, you know? Like,
yeah, of course.
And so the emissary, he looked at his white dress.
Tunic.
His tunic. And he was like, ah, and it was completely stained with shit and stuff. So he was like, he looked at the villagers and he was like, oh, our small city. It's like, okay, I will, don't worry, you can laugh now, but I will wash this away with your blood when I come back. And like, after like a year or something, the Romans came with a legion and they butchered the whole city. And then, yeah, that's like Rome for you.
Yeah, they were fucking sadistic. I think like the dialogues that the Romans had, they were amazing, but I think even better, fucking Spartan dialogue.
Oh, we talked a little bit. Yeah. This was like about laconic humor.
And laconic humor, I think, might be some of the best.
Yes.
Actually.
Which one is your favorite?
If.
Ah. Oh.
If or no. This Athenian emissary came to Sparta. and he asked to the king of Sparta, where are your walls surrounding the city? The king of Sparta spread his spear, and he said, as long as I can spread my spear, those are the walls of Sparta.
Yeah.
And when that, I think it's like the best thing you could, like the laconic humor, I think it's the best kind of dialogue. I would love to be able to do that, but I think I might be just a little bit too cynic to be a laconic.
Okay. Yeah. There's also a nice, the opposite of that one is actually, one time a Spartan went to a walled city, like he saw the walls.
Yeah.
And he said, and the dignitary of the city was like, "Look at our city with the giant walls. Nobody can ever conquer it." And the Spartan said, "These look like the quarters for women because he was looking down on it because like who would want to live in this, you know, like walled city? You're a coward. Who needs walls? You know, just kill anybody who comes. Like only a coward would build this."
If dialogue is also amazing. It was with Herhis, right? Xerxes.
No, it was with the king of Macedon at the time. Yeah. The father of Alexander the Great.
Okay.
Alexander was a great conqueror, but his father actually built most of the army and like state apparatus. And he had like this... after he conquered most of Greece, he sent a dignitary to the Spartans who said like... I'm gonna paraphrasing, but he said like...
Conquer Sparta, we're gonna slaughter your men, kill your make your kids slaves, and rape your women.
Yes.
Towards Sparta, send one dignitary with one word back.
If. Yes.
Beautiful, iconic dialogue.
Yes, definitely. So yeah, I mean the Spartans, but if you look at like Greek history, Thebes also is pretty cool. But they like they were completely burned to the ground by Alexander and his father Philip of Macedon.
Yes.
They actually beat Sparta and Athens both. So they were at this time they were like the dominant force in Greece when this happened, because the Spartans and Athenians always fought, but in the end the Thebans won, and they also had like quite an interesting system. They actually had this military system where like they would have like two men, they would have like a homosexual relationship. And they would have this in like multiple units, and then together they would like the logic was, okay, these guys they love each other, so they will fight harder, and they were called the Band of Brothers. So it's quite a funny idea of like, okay, does love make you fight harder, and should it like, or does it like influence your decision making, things like that. But you can summarize the whole Greek military history as like, oh well, they got bigger spears now. Because that's what happened historically. In the end, the Macedonians had these giant spears that like...
Yeah, like 5 meter long
spears. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, like
three people, you know?
Exactly, yeah. The one with the biggest spear always won, apparently.
Yeah, the long spear always won. The Thebans actually used more mobile tactics, I think, where you had like javelins as well. So the Spartans would be there with their little shields and spears, and the Thebans would throw javelins? I think that's also something that happens, but yeah.
No, another of my favorite Spartan moments is this Spartan general, I think. He got shot by an arrow, and he was bleeding to death. And his last words were, as after he got shot by an arrow, he was, "It's a shame I was killed by a weapon of a coward."
Yeah, but... Yeah. Mm. I mean, at least the thing is, I think an arrow and a bow, that takes skill, you know?
It takes skill. It takes a lot of skill. Arrows. I compete in archery, actually.
Yeah, I respect it. It's not like a gun where you could give a child a gun. And that's why the Japanese, they outlawed guns at the start of, like, the Japanese, I think, shogunate.
Yeah.
They outlawed it. Although also a gun takes skill, but it's quite different. It's less aesthetically pleasing to me. I would rather have you learn this, like, a gun or a sword. And then you like fight each other and like things like that. And it takes like years to master. And if you get killed by some other guy, well, he deserved to kill you basically because he's just better.
Because with a gun, especially modern guns, you can shoot 8 times or 12 times without and you don't need much training behind it.
Yeah.
You need
enough muscle to be able to hold a gun,
yeah,
which isn't that much. Like a gun, what does it weigh?
And it's not even only guns. Yeah, nothing. And even it's not only guns anymore. It's also drones,
yeah,
artillery.
Exactly. No, exactly.
It's just, it's so, your death is so arbitrary and meaningless.
Exactly.
That's why a lot of, after World War One, a lot of the art was like really dystopian and dark, because people were like, war is, it's all meaningless, you know, war.
It's not aesthetically pleasing anymore.
No.
Because let's be honest, if someone shoots you with an arrow, like when you, if you, have you ever shot a bow?
Yeah, but it was like a, what do you call it? Like a practice bow.
Okay, no, you need to develop a back strength, you need to develop technique. To know how you are aiming, you need to develop the sensitivity on your fingertips,
yeah,
so you can actually draw and you can actually know where to anchor your hand,
mm-hmm,
and to be able to aim. You need to be able to actually learn how to breathe differently so you can aim perfectly, and then you just let go. Or if it's a compound bow, you just need to learn how to pull the trigger differently depending on what you're, how you're shooting.
I have an interesting question for you. If the guns didn't exist, do you think there would be school shootings with bow and arrow?
No, of course not.
Or school stabbings?
There's school stabbings in London, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure in Estado de Mexico, like in Estado de Mexico, Mexico State is right next to Mexico City.
I can imagine some kid going to school with an axe and just start chopping, you know?
going full lumberjack.
Full lumberjack. Hey teacher, you were mean to me? Giant axe in the head, or like some arrow. Or like David and Goliath, it just starts throwing stones and like killing people.
I'm pretty sure, like, there's Mexico City, and right next to it is Mexico State, okay?
Mm.
Mexico State is very famous for being very hoodlum, you know? Very
Mexico State is hoodlum, okay?
Yeah. And people, there's people who get stabbed with like screwdrivers all the time there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure some fucking random kid with a jersey from America Football Club has stabbed someone in their school. Like, I'm pretty sure that happens quite often, but the government doesn't care.
It's also in England, it's popular. That's right. I saw it a lot on the news.
Yeah, I don't know why, but the British are starting to be a little sharper with their words and their actions.
Definitely. It must be their British like wit and humor.
Yeah. Top of the morning to you.
That's a deadly dispute.
Those are very sharp words.
Yes.
Very cutting edge.
Cutting edge, yes. Exactly. That's true.
Typical
British.
Yeah.
No, but okay. What has been your favorite country in Europe so far?
Fuck.
And do you think there's a big difference between them?
I've seen a lot of cultural difference in many Spanish cultures, European cultures, because for example, yesterday I arrived here to Aachen with you. And your sister gave you your keys, okay?
Yeah.
When I went there to greet your sister, I went there with a handshake.
Yeah.
That wouldn't, if I was on Spain, I would have gone, instead of for a handshake, for a kiss on the cheek. If I was in Italy, it would have been two, one in each side. If it was in Finland, in France, it would be three.
Yeah.
If it was here, but it was my birthday or her birthday, it would have been three.
Mm.
Like those specific things, I find a lot very interesting.
Yeah.
Also, for starters, when I first arrived to my Erasmus here, I thought Spain was an actual country. Apparently, it's not. It's just Europe's playground.
I wouldn't say that, but
I will. Come with me, Spain.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for you.
A lot of, especially Protestant countries, sometimes look down on the more southern countries because of like cultural and historical and
even though they have better weather.
They have better weather, but they look they always look down, like, oh, there's, even within the country, in the Netherlands, we have a divide between, like, the Protestants and Catholics.
Yeah.
Like, the southern provinces are more Catholics, and then, and, like, all the Protestants always look down, like, oh, those are people from below the river, you know? They're seen as more, less educated, and, like, more backwards, somewhat. That's, I don't know. It's like, some would say it's like a little bit of the arrogance. The British also have it towards, like...
Yeah, towards the Irish.
Yeah, something like that. Because they're also Catholic and... Yeah.
And how did you see... How do people from here, like the Protestants, how do they see the Orthodox?
The Eastern Europeans.
Yeah.
I mean, they see Eastern Europeans in general. It's not really that they see them as Orthodox anymore. They see them just as Eastern Europeans. At least most people I talk with, they don't distinguish between, like, Eastern Europeans. You have Gypsies... And you have Russians and you have the rest, in my opinion.
It's like, they were Soviet Union.
Yeah, because Russians, people are not that well educated about Eastern Europe in, like, most countries. So maybe if you talk to a professor or something like that, he will have, like, a really specific opinion. But I think the general Dutch person, if you ask some Dutch farmer or somebody who, like, works in the stores or something, they'll just say, yeah, they're... They're taking, or either they say they're taking our jobs, or they will say, depends on who they are, they're nice people, or I don't know. But they're not gonna distinguish between, like, Orthodoxy and maybe a Protestant, a hardcore Protestant, would just say something like, oh, maybe they're not as bad as Catholics, I don't know. But they're also divergent, so maybe they do more idolatry than the Protestants. Because one of Luther, the founder of Protestantism, he wrote on the churches, like, his troubles with Catholicism, and one of them was that they worship too much, like, idols. And later, the Catholics, also had some changes they made in the church, and one of them was they reduced that, and that you didn't have to pay to get into heaven, those things. Those were the initial points the Protestants made.
But the Orthodox are even... they are the most old school there is.
Yeah, and they still do a lot of those practices. So.
Yeah, they do still.
So, yeah, that would be a problem between Protestants and, like, Orthodox, definitely. But, yeah, I've been also, like, with you for a while, and you've been on this quest for religion and stuff, and, like, not only religion, but just, like, you've been, like, looking around, trying, like, philosophy... You've been talking about, like, being a cynic and Marcus Aurelius or Stoicism and, like, just in general, like, figuring life out and things for yourself. And
yes.
How has it been going, man? Did you feel like you changed a little in the last 6 months, 7 months, 10 months?
Yeah.
Week? I don't know.
Yeah, I've realized that there's sometimes value in being quiet. Like, just not saying something will... Some things will mean more than actually saying something. And I know that. The problem is that I cannot shut the fuck up. But yeah, well, I realize...
How has this been an issue for you?
There's some power on being quiet. But sometimes I've realized that I speak a little bit too much because I'm hungry for human interaction. And sometimes talking with someone else, it just brings interaction, but sometimes you should get quiet, you should just shut up for a second, which is a problem that I have. I don't shut up enough. So sometimes people might look at me as I was immature, but that's just my personality, maybe. But yeah, sometimes the way you interact with others is different, and sometimes I've realized that sometimes I should have stayed quiet.
Like, can you name an example? Like, I cannot, or is it, like, sensitive?
Yeah. I went to the Melting Pot bar.
Oh yes.
On Wednesday with Bo.
A bar in Cologne.
In Cologne. Wednesdays they have this event where you meet international people. And there was this guy who was from the Netherlands.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was his name?
I don't remember his name. But okay. I was with Bo. She was like, oh, so you're also Dutch? Yeah. Okay, this is Chema, and I've taught him a little bit of Dutch. And she was like, Chema, say what you know in Dutch. So I said, Alla Mutter Nurke. And Papa Lame, no, Slet Lame Pimoros.
Allah Muttenurke means go fuck your mother in Dutch. Mm-hmm. And it means slut, let go of my dick.
Yes, yes.
And this guy got complete, like, his face changed and he looked so angry. Like, I didn't get in many trouble, but this guy just looked at me like if I was, I don't know, maybe like mentally challenged.
Oh, yes.
On a polite way.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was giving me that, like, that stare of death.
Yeah.
And it was quite uncomfortable, but I saw him like the week after that or 2 weeks after that, and he recognized me. He was like, "Hey, sorry, I was very angry that day. I had trouble on work that day." But yeah, like how angry he got was like,
that's what Sabino always says.
Yeah.
But what does he say? Buddha says, "You don't know what they're going through."
Buddha says,
"Don't be angry."
Don't be angry. Exactly. So yeah, it was kind of a awkward situation. But yeah, it was a situation that I got into because I speak a little bit too much. Carnival, I got in some weird situations, which I'm not sure I should disclose in the podcast yet.
No, it's okay. Don't need to.
So yeah, I've got into some shady situations because of me speaking and trying to interact with random people.
Yeah.
But also that made me meet really nice people. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
It's true. I mean, you're always the guy who knows, like, when there's an event, it's always like, Chema, hey, I'll invite some people, or hey, let's go there and there, I know some people, or things like that. You're always like, you have like another, like, people you know or like hang out with, and it's because you're kind of like the icebreaker, and you have an icebreaker because just of who you are, you know? And whether people are like, I don't know, some people won't like it, but you will always have that, or people, and most of the time it's, they also struggle with themselves a little, you know, like the guy says, because if they're, or they're just not in the mood because they have a lot of stress, or I don't know what's going on in their life, but that's okay.
Yeah, it happens, that life, like, sometimes you will have a good day, sometimes you won't.
Yeah. Tell me about your favorite book.
My favorite,
like, book. Fiction and non-fiction. Do you ever talk about books on the podcast?
I don't think so.
Oh, this is the first time.
Yeah, I think it might be. Okay, my favorite fiction book, it has to be Le Petit Prince.
Okay.
The Prince. I think it's a book that's very cliche to say that, because also it's my uncle's favorite book, I think.
Yeah? What's your uncle's name?
Mario. My mom's older brother.
Hmm.
Older brother.
Is he like, what kind of guy is he?
Very serious. Very
serious.
Yeah. Banker.
Oh, banker.
Yeah. So smart guy.
Intellectual guy.
Yeah. And well, yeah, I think it's a very good book because it gets you in touch with your childish feelings. And it talks about this transition from coming from a child to becoming a man. Because in older civilizations...
What's that about, the transition? What changes from child to man? Well, what are the things?
The way you look at life, like, you know how it when the guy starts, like, the little prince, when he first encounters the pilot...
Mm.
The pilot draws for him the hat, but in reality it's a snake that ate an elephant.
Yeah.
Like, you see this difference in the interaction. Like, the old guy is like, I know that this is not this, but older people always thought it was a hat.
Yeah.
But I know it's not this. But you see, like, the... how do you say, like, the innocence and this completely way.
You know what this reminds me of?
Yeah.
Okay, I know this guy from the dormitory where I live for a while called Sabine, and he always likes to talk and read about Buddhism.
Yeah.
Because he's from, like, Asia, from Nepal, a country called Nepal.
That's where Buddha was born.
Buddha was born there. So he's interested in that religion. And he told me about, like, because I'm, like, I was taught in the Abrahamic faith. So, like, I'm a Muslim. My mother was, like, originally Christian. So I'm, like, raised in that environment where, like, I know Islam, Christianity, and Judaism mostly. And some atheist thoughts because I was raised in the Netherlands. So, yeah, but I didn't know a lot about Buddhism or Hinduism, or basically nothing. So he talked to me a little bit about, like, the journey of Buddha, who was, like, raised in this palace. So he was really innocent because his father didn't want him to, like, be corrupted by the earthly things. So, like, pain, suffering, hunger. So he lived a really privileged life. And eventually he got out of the palace and he with his guards and he saw, when he was of age, and he saw all these things, like, what's that? And there was a person that was, like, hungry. He had never seen something like that. So, oh, somebody goes hungry? Give him some food. And then he said, what's that? And it was somebody who was sick. And I was like, people get sick? Help him, get a doctor. So that's also the loss of innocence. Basically, like, the story is a little bit about, he leaves the palace, which is like youth.
Yeah.
And he loses innocence seeing, like, life, like suffering, hunger, pain. And every person has this journey that they are on. And you have to, like, give meaning to life or something is the message. I forgot the more of the story, the moral. I think that part of it is, like, I think also a large part of, like, adulthood is, like, responsibility, you know? When you reach that stage where you have, like, because I'm at that stage right now, you'll need a job, a wife, a family, you need responsibility, and, like, a lot of things.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah, let's be honest, we lose that charm, that different, like, colors lose their brightness, you could even say, like, colors become more dull as you grow up.
What do you mean with that?
Like, the world loses its magic as you get into it.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay. Please, like, elaborate.
In what way would you say color? Like,
I think it doesn't lose its magic, but it changes. Like, instead of becoming this wonderful land of pure joy, you realize there's also responsibilities. There's also duties. And instead of becoming like this playground, it becomes but also a place where you have tasks to complete and there's consequences if you don't do the things you have to. Like, it becomes more complex, and instead of just being like a sandbox video game,
yeah,
you actually have
to quests.
You have quests that you have to do in time.
Definitely. But I would say that's you changing, not the world. Because
that's you, that's true, that's true. But let's be honest, the world, it's as
how you interpret it.
Exactly. That, like,
I get it.
We will never see the world the same way because we interpret it different ways. Like, but right now, I'm in the Netherlands. Mm. Right now, I feel like if I was almost like in a Nat Geo documentary, whenever I see you talking Dutch and see you interact with other Dutch people, yeah, like,
strange.
Oh, so this... Okay, and people use bikes instead of cars. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's quite popular. Yeah. No, but I would say, like, you know, life, I think it's pretty, it's what you make of it as well, you know?
Yeah, of course. I love life. I have the best life ever.
So if you, some people, they only, like, some people just live alone and they reject, like, not society, but they don't want to live with other people and they have very little responsibility and that's what they enjoy. But, like, I definitely think there is good and bad choices, though, you make in life, you know?
Yeah.
And they can also color, like, how your life goes. Because I think when you do, like, make a bad decision, it will have bad consequences, you know?
Yes.
And when you make a good decision, it'll have good consequences. It's like you can fall into a spiral, you know?
Yes.
For example, like, a junkie is a good example of, like, a really simple one. Or, like, you make, like, most things, and you can say, like, you can correlate it with, like, what do you call it? A bad thing, a bad result. You can often draw, like, correlate, you know, the connection between them.
Yeah, exactly.
In my opinion, at least.
That's true. That's
you
true.
Still owe me a book, by the way.
A what?
A non-fiction book.
Oh, yeah, my that's a fiction book. Yeah. My favorite non-fiction book had to, I think it would be The Art of War.
Oh, Sun Tzu. Yeah, that one's quite, I read it as well when I was young, because mm-hmm. quite edgy, yeah? At least with me, with my Art of War, for me it was at least. I don't know why you bought it. My reasons were quite kind of like, you know.
Say it.
I was like, oh, maybe if I ever become like some general, yeah, like a childish dreams. Or
No.
I was really young at the time.
I've read it 3 times. The first time was, I was in, first year of junior high or second year of junior high. And there was a list of pre-approved books.
Okay, literature and, list. We call it.
Yeah, exactly. On my literature list, and there was like, and there were some book, and I wanted, and I had to finish my book, to do my book report, and I was a lazy motherfucker, and that was one of the shortest books there was.
Mm.
So I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna read that one.
Mm.
The first time I read it, I didn't understand much. I thought it was more of an actual general guide.
Yeah.
Instead of like life philosophy. Then I read it when I was first starting college.
Yeah.
And I realized, okay, this is actual useful knowledge for life and philosophy. And the last time I read it, it was like about a year ago. I didn't read it. I got it as an audiobook.
Okay.
And I listened to it in one workout.
Do you read on PDF or like actually in a book or?
I prefer paper.
Oh, yeah. But
I don't have anything against reading on my iPhone.
Yeah.
I think the most books I have read have been in iPhones or audiobooks.
Yeah.
I love audiobooks. Especially, for example, I really enjoy like workouts with audiobooks. I don't usually read fiction. Like, I haven't read fiction in a long time, because if I'm gonna consume fiction, I like the visuals.
Yeah.
Like, for example, instead of reading Neil Gaiman's. No, that might be the last fiction book I have ever read. The Norse Myths interpretation of Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
But yeah, it was. Yeah, but I prefer, if I'm gonna consume fiction, instead of reading Neil Gaiman's American Gods, I would just see the TV show. I don't know why, but I really prefer that with fiction books. I don't really like them. But for example, I really enjoy reading philosophy.
Yeah.
Which
ones?
Which philosophy books?
I think I already know. You said it a few times.
Yeah, like
Marcus Aurelius and stuff.
Marcus Aurelius. Yeah. I love him. The Book of the Six Rings by Miyamoto Musashi.
Okay.
Fuck it, do whatever you want. I don't remember the name of the author.
I don't know it either.
Yeah, Sun Tzu's Art of War.
Yeah.
I think this is another quote. This is a very famous quote from every fucking jiu-jitsu fighter whenever they get the blue belt. Like, I prefer to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war.
Okay.
And I think like having a strong mentality,
yeah,
to be able to commit like brutal shit in case you actually need it, should be kind of important.
Yeah, but the brutal shit always is like noble, or like there's like nobility involved. So
yeah.
It's never like needless or like cruel. It's always like to protect or like to service for the country, protection of the weak.
Yeah,
at least. Otherwise, it would be. That's why you have like the barbarian persona, you know?
Yeah.
That's the person who doesn't care about that. It's just like money, gold, women, you know?
Yeah, burning villages as people are sleeping.
Yeah. But the warrior is the person from a civilized country who does it like, like you remember maybe I guess the glory hound is somewhere between, like, remember maybe you saw Troy the movie,
yeah,
like you have Achilles and Hector in the movie, in the Iliad it's not like that, like for example Achilles is more this giant in the Iliad, and then like Troy is like a handsome Brad Pitt, you know.
Yeah.
And Hector is also quite ugly and stuff in the Iliad.
Okay, the recording was stopped suddenly, but yeah, we were talking about how Achilles was basically a huge attention whore.
Yeah. But let's talk maybe. So those are the books you like the most, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
What about you, Nils?
For nonfiction. I think recently I read more, like, I read a lot throughout my life, like from Harry Potter to whatever.
You've never read it? Never read the movies of Harry
Potter. Oh my god, my god.
I've been avoiding it my whole life. I do it on purpose because I enjoy being a contrarian sometimes, okay?
Well, that makes sense. But, there's like. But I would say the best nonfiction I've read is like, it's not the best, but I would like to recommend it because I think many people have not read it. It's like a web serial format. It's like my guilty pleasure. And it's like a format where like the authors update their stories like monthly or like daily or every week, like three times or something. And they get paid by like the patrons. It's like OnlyFans, but for books, basically.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool. And it's based on like, it used to be a newspaper. So you would buy a newspaper and it would be like the Sudoku, some old woman looking for a husband, some guy trying to sell something, and like a little story, you know?
Yeah.
And that would be updated every time you bought a newspaper, it would be a new chapter. So that's I really like one called Worm. It's a web serial you can find online. It's not a commercial, by the way, but this is just the one I like. What else? And like nonfiction, I like Thomas Paine, Common Sense. It's about like the English Empire. And it's just about life, because I was like raised in like a Muslim family. This is about like, this explained like Western civilization to me in a way that's quite positive, you know? Okay, so like liberalism, individualism, like things like that. It's like the foundation of like America, basically. Common Sense from Thomas Paine, and it explains like why should America. Also, it's like why you don't need, like, for example, why did America not need the British Empire? Because at the time, a lot of people that were against the revolution said, okay, why should we leave the British Empire? They protect us. They have this huge army and navy. Will be part of the British Empire, and it's good for our trade relations. And a lot of the people, the isolationists, yeah, were like, oh, we don't need that stuff. We can do that all ourselves. We can make our own trade deals. We don't need like some king somewhere.
I'll be in my own country with horse and gambling and slot machines. Yeah. You know that meme?
No, I don't know.
No. Never seen Futurama?
I've never seen Futurama.
Okay, there's an episode with...
Hey, my favorite is The Simpsons. I already told you. We can have a discussion about this too. Like.
But there's this episode on Futurama where they kick out Bender from a city in Mars. He's like, okay, I'm going to start my own city.
Vegas, basically.
Yeah, but he says, I'm going to start my own city with slots and slot machines.
Slot machines.
You know, the ones you put your
slots.
Slots.
Oh, yeah, we saw that in the gambling.
Slots as in horse, yes. And slots in, yeah.
That looks deadly.
Yeah, the fucking gambling edition looks depressing. We went to a gambling hall in Cologne.
Yeah.
It was the most depressing place ever.
We glanced in, like, what's going on?
Yeah, there? Because you could see the people inside. They were gambling all of their money, and they were hoping that they would either lose all their money so they could starve to death, or get enough money to buy a gun on the black market to shoot themselves.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good description if I ever heard of.
But yeah, no, it's...
Oh, by the way, because I'm Algerian maybe, but I also read a lot of books from like the North Africa and like Ibn Khaldun, who is one of the founders of a lot of like branches of like economics, demography, things like that. Yeah. And he was like a historian, philosopher. He was quite an arrogant guy, but he had a lot of books he wrote that were quite interesting. I also like his books, Makwaldeen, I think it's called. You can just Google Ibn Khaldun, and like he had two books that were really good. One was about like civilization and the cycle. Civilization is quite cyclical, and like there's like these booms and busts, you know. So you have like civilizations that come from like in his time those like. He came, I think, originally from like Spain, just when it fell. So he fled to North Africa. And then also the Mongols invaded like the Middle East at that time. So he was like living in a really turbulent times, you know?
Yes.
So that influences like philosophy about life as well and civilization. So he really believes in like, okay, you gotta have this civilization that's gonna... First there is this conqueror generation that's gonna conquer like the lands and stuff.
Yes.
Then you have like lawmakers. And after that you will have like the... I think the builders, and after that it will decline, you know.
Yeah.
So and that's gonna be a cycle. When it declines too much and decadence sets in, the new conquerors will come, or like something like that. And that was his philosophy on like things. And he also wrote a book about like how to make wealth and where does wealth come from. And his belief is like, okay, well, there's three things and like success.
Yes.
So you have like. The first thing is like inheritance, so like what you inherit from your parents, so genetics, money, things like that. The second one is like arbitrary luck or God, so like if like a meteor falls on your head, that's just, you know, what can you do?
Or you found like I don't know, like a kilo of gold in your
that's just arbitrary luck.
In the floor, yeah.
Of destiny or whatever. And then the final one is your labor. So how much do you work? How much effort do you put in? Are you like disciplined? Those are the things that contribute to your success and wealth. But yeah. So I think those were the books that I wanted to talk about. And yeah. I think...
We can continue getting a new episode tomorrow too.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I think it's quite late.
It's quite late. It's 12
in the night. It's 12. 9 a.m. right now, so we're gonna stop this and maybe we can record another episode.
What do you want to talk about?
Whatever you want, bro.
Okay.